Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. And it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio all three panelists, starting with Zaz Hollander. Welcome, Zaz.
Hi, Mike. Good to be here and see everybody in person.
And sitting in for Mark Kelsey, who's off on a trip across the country, none other than David Cheesen.
Well, hello. Thanks for having me.
Okay. And, of course, Terry Snyder.
Glad to be here.
Welcome, Terry. Well, let's dispose of the weather, first of all. Today is Friday, and on Friday, this morning, many people who experienced fear last night woke up to varying degrees of reality.
And relief at not seeing a half inch of snow on the ground.
Right.
Although there was ice. It froze at my house on the way to Hatcher.
I think it snowed in Sutton, I heard.
I can give you a firsthand report. On Thursday evening, it was my great pleasure to drive at 5:30 in the evening from Palmer up to Glacier View. So I started out on a nice day, sort of ran into rain in Sutton. And as I proceeded beyond Sutton and the elevation climbed, I was in a snow squall.
Wow.
And it was snowing. And then when I got to Glacier View at the school, the sun came out. Talking to the people in that area was instructive because the day before there had been 3 to 5 inches of snow in people's driveways.
Wow.
Which had melted away pretty quickly. They expected some additional snow, of course, to accumulate. Driving back, the snowstorm had pretty much given way to rain, but you could see on the mountainsides that definitely there was snow pretty low on the sides of the mountains. Reports coming in today on Friday said that there were people who stepped out and looked around, and as they walked across their lawn, they heard the crinkling sound of frozen grass. But the temperature seems to have been hanging right there at roughly 32 degrees, a little bit one side or the other. And in downtown Palmer, things were okay.
Banana belt.
Right.
So I was in Denver last week.
And it
snowed there a couple of days. And same thing, downtown Denver didn't pile up on the streets. But in Fort Collins and outside areas, they had 8 to 10 inches. And I've gotten reports from Denver this morning with trails that they have that they're normally on this year that have 8 to 14 inches on them still.
Wow.
So it's not just us.
Right. And the ice is off Walby Lake. Is that true, David?
Oh, yeah. It's been off for a long time, and it's still off. But the ride in this morning, was just everywhere you turn is a great, postcard mountain view of the new snow on the mountains and clear blue sky.
A fall look. It kind of looks that way. Look.
Yeah,
right,
that low snow line.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah, we had a nice summer.
Don't say that.
But it is a beautiful Friday morning in Palmer with the Friday Fling setting up here in the studio.
Right, all of that. Let's start. Zaz, do you have any other weather-related topics you may want to just mention?
Oh, I see what you're doing here, Mike. We talked, studio audience or outside studio audience, about an issue that was a concern, I think, on the Kahiltna Glacier, which is where base camp for Denali climbers. There are a bunch of different routes that are accessed from, it's a little over 7,000 feet on the glacier. And there was about half the snowpack as usual on the glacier, I think until two nights ago when it dumped up there. But I was seeing reports of maybe 8 feet of snow where usually there's 11 or 12. And a crevasse had opened up kind of close to the runway that the air taxis use to ferry climbers in and out. And there were also the snow bridges on the route up to the mountain the climbers were using were thinner than usual. And so I'd heard that there were a few kind of relatively inconsequential falls, nothing needing rescue or Park Service assistance, but just a few unguided climbers who got into an area that had a thin snow bridge on it. But it sounds like those concerns have been remedied by Mother Nature and snow.
Okay.
On the mountain.
Very
so,
good.
So thanks, while the
Mom.
Gardeners were frantic, the other part of the borough and up above, they were quite happy to see the weather change.
That's right. And there actually was sort of an interesting broader point I heard reporting that quick story was that it sounds as if, and maybe everybody already knows this, but that most of the expeditions up Denali now are guided. It's sort of switched over from the more independent climbers to more guided groups. I don't know if they're kind of one comes after the other, if you're if you're going to shell out the kind of money you need to make that trip and take the kind of time, you don't want to do it with a bunch of guided, you know, groups on the mountain with
you. So that it's purposeful, or is that something that the Park Service is?
No, the Park Service limits the total number of climbers. Mm. I think it's 1,500, and they've never seen that many in a season. Mm. It's about 1,100 or 1,200, kind of at a plateau now for the last few years.
Okay. Thank you. Well, since we've been talking about winter type of activities, let's touch upon the recent news regarding the Iditarod. Mm. Big news, a report in Alaska Dispatch news article that revealed that a longtime supporter of the Iditarod race, Wells Fargo, has pulled out. And the tie in the discussion was about a group called PETA, that if you go to the PETA website, you will find some statements fairly derogatory about the Iditarod and a request to have people essentially contact the organizations that have provided financial support for the Iditarod, including Wells Fargo, Coca-Cola, and so on, and request that they not do that in the future. We all have witnessed in either close proximity or somewhat of a distance, the Iditarod from within Alaska. And I guess I'd start with Terry and say, what's your sense of two things? One, the Iditarod as an event, and this lobbying for divestiture, if you will, by supporters.
Well, I think they've been lobbying against this for a lot of years. Why it came to this pinnacle, it's hard to kind of pinpoint. Wells Fargo isn't saying that's the reason they're pulling out. There's a lot of reasons, maybe about the state's fiscal plan that, and maybe where they don't want to invest money. But the reports are, and that's what the Iditarod folks are saying. And, you know, it's a iconic event. I'm an animal lover, so I have concerns. Not anything to really scoff at, 150 dogs that have died since the beginning, although it's been a long history of it. We all know mushers. Most of the mushers, I would say, majority, and ones I know, take really care and love their dogs, and their dogs love to run, and they are as saddened and upset when they lose a dog as, you know, the people watching. But there are some bad, you know, bad characters in every sport, and there certainly are those that are that, and I think the science is getting better on it. I think that the veterinarians are more watchful, but there are some things that you can't even look out for, you know, moose tramplings, and it's a dangerous for both man and beast. So I'm sort of on the fence about it. I'd hate to see it go away because it has been such an iconic thing, and there are other races. So if we lose this one, they'll go to Canada. It's not going to stop dog racing. But on the other hand, I can see people being upset about losing dogs too.
Mm-hmm. David?
All lateral to my
David. You have witnessed the great involvement, I think, of school kids and programs following the Iditarod and having visits from dogs and the mushers and so on. But what's your thoughts about this?
Well, I think. In a way, in the past, the Iditarod has benefited from some of the outside pressure. It's just the right balance. But the extreme view that the only humane way to treat a dog is to have him as a pet indoors is not at all, I think is sort of self-destructive. And the there's a culture that is the good racers have this relationship with their dogs that is profound and meaningful, and it's educational for kids and the people they employ to socialize the dogs. The whole range is a net positive, and I would hope that they could do without, you know, the politics, but I also hope that the Iditarod would always survive without being, that it doesn't have to be a corporate entity. It wasn't always a corporate entity. It could Alaska would benefit just as much from an Iditarod that didn't have the huge cash prizes and what have you, but it had people, amateurs who love the race and love the sport, and so forth.
Zoss?
We have to.
Zoss?
Yeah, I think that both David and Terry make great points. I don't know if there's that much left to say. The race has changed so much since its original start, you know, memorializing a serum run, and there's so much money in it now, and it's so fast. I think one of the issues with PETA raising this flag and Wells Fargo maybe following their lead or not. I mean, Wells Fargo has had its own troubles with optics.
Yeah.
So you know, who knows if they want to take their name off a race like this. But yeah, and it is curious that this decision comes the same year that the Sled Dogs documentary was set to air up in Whistler, and that generated quite a bit of controversy when it came out. Because it really kind of showcased the abusive aspects of distance sled dog racing in Iditarod. But I think one of the problems with a group like PETA radicalizing, you know, their argument is that you lose a more constructive discussion. Mm-hmm. There are problems with the race, mm-hmm. you know.
Sure.
There are some bad mushers out there, mostly good mushers, but there's, you know, anytime you're sleep deprived and trying to win money, you know, who knows what kind of decisions you're, mm-hmm. you're going to be making out there. There are regularly dogs that die, 5 this year.
Mm-hmm.
There were some issues, it sounds like, with transport policy and procedure, mm-hmm. and that's on Iditarod.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that should not be happening. And so, you know, I think hopefully we can take the productive side of this, of Wells Fargo pulling out, to have a more constructive conversation about how Iditarod could be better.
Yeah, I guess the only point I forgot, too, is it's a huge economic driver in the bush to these communities. There are some communities that this is the event. I'm thinking of McGrath and a few of them that, I mean, they get tourists and stuff a little bit in the summer, but in the winter, they depend on this as sort of their economic driver in some of these villages. And we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that, you know, mushing is a way of life. It's a culture of Alaska, too, even though they're not racing, but it's certainly something that isn't just done during the Iditarod. Just want to point that out.
Okay. We mentioned that this is Memorial Day weekend. And at this time, we are told that if we watch carefully, we will see some rare birds. These are legislators and people from even maybe Washington, D.C., who come back and are visible and approachable. And I thought it would be useful to think about some things that we could say that would be encouraging to particularly the local legislators who go back to Juneau. They've completed, I think, about 8 days of the special session, at least 22 left after this. And I have scoured media outlets in an attempt to see anything. And the only thing I have found is a summary that says there was nothing. There was some...
Well, there was an opiate bill.
There was an opiate bill.
The House has done some work.
The House version had passed, and then some work in there. I don't discount that. But in terms of the budget itself...
Mm-hmm. The elephant in the room.
Yes. And so I'm thinking... All right, people are going to come back. They're going to be refreshed with holiday, see their families and friends, and then they're going to go back there. What can we say if you happen to run into, figuratively speaking, a legislator that would encourage them to move forward so that, for example, my understanding is that the 1st of June comes next week, Wednesday. Monday's a holiday. That gives 2 days to do something that would preclude additional pink slips for state employees going out. So, who would like to take a crack at this first? Who's the most positive person here? David.
You think? Well, you know, I'm so glad you mentioned Memorial Day, because what is Memorial Day about? It's about celebrating or honoring the people of great courage who have put their own lives at stake to defend their country, and so I guess I would hope that those moments of reflection would somehow transfer into making some hard choices about revenue that so the state can generate some revenue and keep our economy going. And because this affects real lives, it affects the people who are going to get those pink slips. It's going to affect people who are depending on an economy that works. And it's you know, to keep retreating back to the comfortable canards about let's just cut out the fat and whatever it is that the people are saying over and over without thinking, it does not reflect well on Memorial Day weekend.
So they can do better.
They can do better. That's the positive statement you're looking for.
Well, something like that. So, Terry.
I can only think of three words: do your job. You know, I mean, they've really had a long time to do this. I think the pressure should be on the Senate. The House did tell members to go home, except those on the conference committee, and told everybody that they would not be getting per diem. At least it's saving the state that. I haven't seen a statement from the Senate, but they are reportedly not even close to solving this. I almost wonder if they want to see pink slips on the Senate side go out, and that this won't be the only special session at this point, because they are so far apart. And, you know, I hope there is some. I know last night Representative, not from the Valley, but Representative Klayman and Grin had a town hall that reportedly was packed. I'm sure they got an earful, but they've sort of been the House side that has been doing something and has a proposal to bring new revenue forward. I'd like to see some senators have some similar town halls and hear from the public, because they haven't been what I would consider as open as they should be from hearing from the public. They're hearing from people seemingly that is the same ideology that they're purporting, which is we'll just leave a gap in the budget and keep borrowing on our funds and think about it next year, Scarlett. And I think that's just not the answer Alaskans are looking for. And the economy is scaring everybody at this point, not just those that are getting pink slips, but those that are retracting what they're spending in small business and other businesses, because they don't know. Not only is the climate uneven here, it's federally uneven. So people are really hunkered down, and it's starting to show.
Okay. Zaz, positive statements.
Well, I'm a reporter, so I don't tend to walk up to politicians and make positive statements. But I guess I would just want to make sure I don't get body slammed.
Yeah.
Would be my goal.
Yeah, maybe that's a positive.
Or slapped.
Yeah.
Right.
And so how have you worked that out? Have you ever, now that you've raised
that question,
the point about something that happened in Montana, have you ever got close to someone being an elected official that has threatened bodily harm in some fashion?
Never threatened bodily harm, but certainly threatened any number of times over the years. The closest I've gotten to bodily harm was a private citizen at a plane crash, and I was pretty visibly pregnant at the time. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, stay cool. Relax. That's maybe the thing. But the reason I brought this up is because these people are charged with doing something. And when we reflect upon what many would suggest they're not doing, we still have to come around and say, okay, this is what we would like you to do, and we believe you can do. And somehow that message, I think, might be more helpful than beating one up and saying, okay, we're going to keep on beating you until you get the point. I don't know about you, but beating kids, for example, into submission and into the right direction hasn't always proven workable. And although some would suggest that legislators are not yet adults and they're in a kid fashion in what they're doing, we still want to encourage them in some way. So I have to throw that out for listeners and everyone. What can you say to move them to be successful?
But I will say that the town halls, the ones that are getting noisy and people are coming out to have different opinions than what they're usually saying, is starting to move the needle in the lower 48. Now, we haven't had that many because we haven't had that many opportunities yet. But certainly Senator Sullivan's last week wasn't all hearts and roses as it normally is in those things. And I think that is a good message to hear, that people shouldn't stay in their easy chair and just assume they're going to do the right thing. They need people to come out and tell them differing views, because they have a tendency to select one point of view that aligns with their own and dismiss everybody else. And I think that's what's missing here, is both all those voices to hear from them. And sometimes it needs to be loudly.
Mm-hmm. Well, and of course, there's a little bit of irony when comparing the state with the national level. I understand that recently information was provided to Congress that maybe they needed to act sooner than later, or the U.S. government would be running out of cash. And the irony is that here we are in Alaska with piles and piles of cash, billions of dollars, and it doesn't seem to make it any easier to come to a decision. Well, let's bring it right home here to the Mat-Su Borough. Mat-Su Borough Assembly will be meeting. They have been struggling with a way to provide additional funding for the school district in particular. And my understanding that there have been recent meetings that have moved this along. This is the mayor, the manager meeting, to provide a proposal for sales tax that would be applied borough-wide. And that should be coming up at the next meeting, because they're running out of meetings. They only have three meetings until they can actually get this on a ballot for this next year. And it would be a way of providing additional funding, which would assist, since the borough has been unable to increase the amount of money provided to the school district this year in the present budget. So I suspect that's going to be a very, very contentious, much-discussed item. We already know that cities in particular are pushing back. If you're going to add, for example, borough-wide 1.5%, 2% on, and you're not going to accommodate for the city's positions, whether it's Wasilla or Palmer, that means you're bumping up to the 5, 6% zone. What's your thought, Terry, about the possibility of getting this on the ballot, number one, which would require courage on the part of the assembly, and then secondly, whether it has a chance of passing in the borough?
Well, I think it could get on the ballot. I think that there's enough people, they're desperate enough for an answer that they might put it there. I'm not optimistic if they don't have the support of the cities that it'll pass. I don't think it'll go the same way it did last time.
Okay, David?
And times before that.
Right, yeah, it would be a real surprise if it passed. But they've got to do something. So I don't know. I think they're clutching at the only tool they have left, but I don't see it passing.
Besides.
Yeah, same in terms of if it makes it to the ballot. I think the makeup of this assembly is one that they would want to put the question out there. I think the vote would go to putting it on the ballot and let the people decide. But I'd be shocked.
I think it would have a better chance if Anchorage did it first. That's what really needs to move the needle. And secondly, if it were a special election, because that has a tendency to have the pro side turn out for that. But as part of a general election, I doubt it. Plus this unknown whether we're going to have a state sales tax. Again, it's waiting to find out what the legislator is going to do, because that could be what they do. They decide no income tax, but they know they need revenue, and they determine they want a sales tax. So we'll know that before the October ballot, but for this year anyway. So that could change things too, because now you're talking about several percent.
Okay. Well, I want to thank the three participants on the panel this day for coming all the way into the studio. Coming out of the sun of a glorious day, which was a recovery from some rain and cold that we have experienced. So I'll thank Terry Snyder. Thank you, Terry.
Have a safe weekend.
And I'd like to thank David Cheesham. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
And I'd like to thank Zoss Hollander. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Everybody have a great weekend.
Okay. Be safe out there. Just a reminder that the governor has put out a couple of reports and reminders that there are extra special attention being paid, in particular to dangerous highways. This involves additional troopers working with local police departments, whether it's Wasilla, Palmer, or beyond, that there will be aviation involved. And a good portion of this is being funded by federal monies, which are available to increase this kind of patrol. The bottom line is it's Memorial Day weekend. We already know there's a lot of traffic out there. Just be extra careful, extra safe, whether you're driving or you're contemplating starting a small fire. And we'll be back next week for another edition of Valley Edition.